You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
Now, they're saying I should think stuff with you too. They're saying something is wrong with me.
How'd
you get to
be so cynical?
Practice.
Hey there. Help you?
What state is this?
Sorry.
You don't understand the question?
Oh, no, I didn't. Most people know where they are.
Why ain't most people?
You're in the glorious state of Arkansas, sweetheart.
How'd you know they was lying?
Well, this ain't Arkansas, so everyone is lying.
Your idea is incredible.
I can't argue with that. We pay for everything, so this country belongs to us.
It's just business. Hunting human beings for sport.
They're not human beings.
Every year, a bunch of elites
kidnap normal folk like us.
Where'd they get you from?
Wyoming. Mississippi.
Orlando.
And hunt us for sport. Hurry, hurry, hurry up.
So it's true.
We're being hunted.
Hey, what am I gonna wait?
What is happening?
Put him in the back with the rest.
I don't care where we go.
Now they can't see us.
You just told them we're here.
What was that?
I think that was a rifle.
Move!
Come on. Everybody get out of here! Jesus! Come on.
Who are these people?
How are they getting away with this?
You have no idea what you're up against.
That was the audio for a movie that you may not ever see, but I'm going to bet that you probably will at some point. And it's called The Hunt. And we'll get into why you may or may not see it in the near future. But first, I have to introduce the co-host. He is the Travis Yates. You can find him on Twitter at the Travis Yates. And Travis, you know, last month we discussed 1999, or actually the 90s, and we had a very cynical take. We realized the 90s were a lot darker than I think either us really remember. And I'd like to say that this episode is going to be all rainbows and unicorns and happy times, but I think once we get into it, it's going to be even as cynical as last month's episode.
Well, I was my understanding that we'd be talking about unicorns and rainbows this week, so I'm not sure where we're going next, but I'm always glad to be here, regardless of the topic and regardless of what rabbit hole we go down.
Yeah, I mean, we may work in some Deadpool references, which would then lend itself to unicorns and rainbows.
R-rated. Sorry. But
before we do that, let's get all the other plugs out of the way. Tell us about your football podcast, because the football season is upon us now as we record this. And do you have any early season predictions?
Yeah, thanks, Chad. Yeah, I co-host a podcast on the Pro Football Network. It's called The Fantasy Fixers. And, you know, this was born from the just inordinate amount of time that I spend trying to improve my fantasy team each year. And so I got with these very knowledgeable football guys and said, look, you know, why don't I do a podcast that just kind of, it's just a brain fart of all of my knowledge that is considered useless in many ways, but in other ways, if you enjoy fantasy football like I do, it's not worthless because it brings a lot of joy to your life. So myself and Dennis Sosik is very knowledgeable as well in all fantasy, not just football. He's kind of the go-to fantasy guru for all sports at Pro Football Network. But yeah, you can find us every Tuesday morning. A new episode drops. Just go to profootballnetwork.com and click on the podcast page.
Now, as a fantasy football player or fantasy football manager, whatever, I don't know the proper term for how you...
Owner. Owner is technically the word.
Technically, yeah. I don't believe you can use that word in sports anymore.
We'll have to change that.
Yeah. But I was going to ask, if you're watching a football game with other people, do you only talk about the players that are on your team or that you're going against?
No. I love the game of football so much that I'm interested in every football game, but fantasy just kind of takes it up a notch. If you're, you know, on your couch and you have 8 games to choose from, that's gonna, you know, your fantasy team might dictate who you watch based on how many players you have in whatever game. So certainly it plays a role in some of your viewing habits, maybe. But as far as watching the game, now some people are just completely annoying about it, and it's just constantly updates on how their team is doing and their players are doing, and that's just a little much. So I try to avoid doing that.
Okay, well that's good, because I was just thinking that's one of my annoyances with fantasy football players is how they talk about their teams all the time, and it makes me really want to just kind of hunt them all down and maybe possibly maim or harm them. Which also reminds me of this little film. It's called The Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of this film?
I got to be honest. I had not heard of this film until you brought it to my attention for the podcast.
And I had not heard about it until about a day before I brought it to your attention, because even though it's supposed to release in September of 2019, there was no real marketing for this or promotion of this film until some tragic events in El Paso and Dayton had Universal Films come out and say, first, we're delaying the film due to these events. And then a couple days later, they said, okay, we're just scrapping the film altogether. I'm sure that at some point it will be released, whether it's straight to a VOD service or streaming. But I do not think this film will be shelved and join the ranks of something like, say, Song of the South, where it becomes a collector's item.
Yeah, we'll definitely see this film. We might not see it with a theatrical release. This might be a direct-to streaming situation, depending on the blowover here. But so far, they've done a good job, I think. The choice to shut it down, that could be debated, certainly. I get the feeling that Universal did this more of as a move of self-preservation as much as they did trying to be sensitive to what, you know, we're dealing with right now as a country. You know, these weren't the first shootings, and they certainly won't be the last. And so the fact that they even, you know, greenlit this project or wanted to distribute this project shows that they're not overly concerned with releasing a film like this in today's, you know, current society, the landscape, with all of these issues. So, you know, movies are a form of escapism, obviously, and especially when you go to shell out $20, $30 to go to a cinema and see one. So given what just happened, I doubt many people want to escape reality to a place that's mirroring that reality. So, you know, financially smart to pull it and hold it. But then also, as you mentioned, you know, there were tweets from the president that implicitly referenced this film, and, you know, Laura Ingraham on her Fox News program was up in arms over it. So there was also a little bit of political strife happening there that I'm sure might have played a little bit of a role there.
Yeah, and I think that's where this initial blowback comes into play, because you did make a lot of points in what you just said, which I'm going to expand on throughout this episode. Because there's a lot to unpack with this situation. But my first hearing of this movie, I believe, was an article on Yahoo. I don't know if it actually came from Yahoo or where, because Yahoo often just publishes other sources. But my initial thought was kind of along those lines of, I can't believe they made this movie to begin with, because the synopsis in the article stated that it's a bunch of liberal elites who kidnap deplorables, and I believe they use the term MAGA in some context, and then hunt them down. And the original title of the movie was Red State versus Blue State.
Right. Yeah.
So my thought was, okay, this is obviously politically tinged and why, when you have a society, a country that is already divided as we are, why would you make a film that just kind of plays into those stereotypes and those divides, if you will? And I was kind of taken aback, and I've been like, look, this, and I think this is what Trump was saying. It's like, it's liberal Hollywood pushing its violent fantasies onto the flyover country that they despise.
I don't know if I've ever agreed with this current president, but it kind of feels like that. And I'm with you in the fact that, and you know, this specific type of film, we've seen it before. Mm-hmm. It's a narrative structure and narrative kind of trope that we've seen before. I mean, even in a comedic way, the Pest with John Leguizamo, if you can remember that from the mid-90s, had this exact same premise. But to do it again with the country as divided as it is into red and blue states, essentially, mm-hmm. Red and blue camps, corners, if you will, yeah, it's just an incredibly bad taste.
Now, like I said, when I first read it, yes, there was that outrage of why would you do the political thing, and especially in the context of liberal, kind of playing up the liberal elite status. But then I got to thinking about it, and as you said, we have seen this movie several times over. There's a book from the 1930s, I believe, called The Dangerous Game or The Most Dangerous Game, and it's been the basis of several television episodes and other movies, including, you mentioned The Pest, there is the Rutger Hauer, RIP, and Ice-T movie Surviving the Game, and also the classic 1993 first American movie for John Woo, not Jean, he's not French, but John Woo, the Jean-Claude Van Damme star Hard Target. So again, this is not
Wait a minute.
Yeah,
I just have to stop you there. I'm pretty sure I can't believe you're also forgetting the 2007 classic Stone Cold Steve Austin movie, The Condemned. Wasn't that the premise of that as well?
I think something like that. Yeah,
TV show. Yeah,
yeah. Good point. Good pull. But I was gonna say, it's if you follow the narrative structure of what these films would be. So yes, the I'm going to air quote, deplorables are the hunted, but you know by the end of the film, one of them or two of them are going to turn the tables and actually wipe out all of the elites and find out whoever's putting it on and take that person out, thus showing them to be the better hunter or, they're going to be standing tall at the end of the day, basically.
Right.
And also I want to just throw in also the movie Predators. It has a similar plot as well, although that takes place on a different planet with aliens. So maybe you can get away with saying, not necessarily the same.
Now, I want to play devil's advocate here, because you also, the film cinema is an art. Mm-hmm. Art is a release. It's a release for the human spirit. It's a release of human frustrations. And this concept, this idea, could have very much been born out of frustration with the current landscape, political, social, economical, what have you. And, this could have been, I don't know. I haven't seen any interviews with the writer, the filmmaker. I don't know much about the production of this film, but it was intended to be a warning or a wake up call of look at where we're heading if this red versus blue continues, which it's getting nasty out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, people will see a bumper sticker or they'll see a hat, they'll see a shirt representing one party or the other, and they'll say something very rude or even, it could come to blows. So this might have been a warning, intended to be a warning. So I'm just kind of devil's advocate here of I'm just trying to hypothesize of why this movie would have been made.
That's a fair point. And my intention the night before we recorded this was to try to find anywhere online if the script had leaked or been posted. Although one of the writers credited is a guy you've probably heard of. His name is Damon Lindelof. And I have a rule that if I ever see his name on a movie, I will not go see it because I think he's a terrible writer. And so I don't think there's that much thought put into this movie. That's my own bias. I'll just put it out there.
Right. Well, and this is also, I mean, Blumhouse Productions was the production company. And I mean, they're behind The Purge, which that's a terrible concept.
And The Purge, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but The Purge is basically the same movie in a different context and
reworked,
also made by Universal. And they've made four of them. Plus a TV series. It's been a staple at their Halloween Horror Nights the last few years. And I believe there's another Purge movie in the works. So this goes back to what you were saying about I don't think Universal is really concerned with the content of the movie given the current state, you know, the current events. I think it's more of an ill-timed situation. And, you know, I don't know if you remember the 1980s semi-classic Space Camp, but it was supposed to come out. Are you familiar with Space Camp?
It's floating around at the front of my
It stars
brain.
Tate Donovan, Leah Thompson, Larry B. Scott from Revenge of the Nerds.
I've seen it.
And a young Leaf, not Joaquin yet, but Leaf Phoenix, who are students at Space Camp, and they're in the space shuttle, and a robot who is friends with Leaf's character sets the spaceship off, and it blasts off into space, and they have to figure out how to get back, you know, to Earth. Mm-hmm. That movie came out in 1986. Shortly before it was released, we had the Challenger explosion. And so the movie got shelved for a couple months, which in that case, it's, you know, no one expected a space shuttle to blow up. And yes, you could see why it would be postponed due to that event. And even when it did come out, it did not do well at the box office. It grossed less than $10 million total, which I guess in today's dollars would be like less than, I don't know, 20, 25 million. I'm making numbers up. But it's but it's one of those things where that, in that instance, you can see like, okay, yes, you're delaying this film because of this event that is an anomaly. Whereas in the case of The Hunt, you're pushing a movie or you're shelving a movie due to events that happen every couple weeks.
Right. Yeah. I think that it needs to be a massive event. And in the case of Space Camp, as you referenced, given the timing, and then in the case of this, with just especially with it being, you know, the double mass shooting in you know, different parts of the country over the span of one weekend was 24 hours. I was full caveat here. I've been in a cabin in the woods for almost 3 weeks. I've been off the grid on vacation, so I you know, that might have been one of the reasons why I also didn't hear much about The Hunt. I didn't even know about the shootings till I got back to town, and that Sunday right after it had happened, that's when I found out. So, yeah, I think they're just they see the financial disaster coming with this, and they're gonna shelve it. And you know, the only question of will we see it in theaters is, does this have the stink on it now? Are people did this get enough buzz that it was shelved that people are gonna immediately associate it with these two shootings and then just not want to touch it? If it doesn't, if they don't feel that way, and you know they'll do the research, the market research to find out. You know, we might see a Christmas, God forbid, or, you know, they might even hold it till the summer, you know, and do a summer release.
Yeah, you know, change the title just to fake people out so that people don't associate the movie. And, you know, this is a low-budget film. I think the budget was between $15 and $18 million. So in Hollywood terms, not a huge loss.
Yeah, not at all.
If they shelve it. I think the cynic in me would say, because this is Blumhouse and it's from the people that did The Purge, if this movie was good, Universal would find a way to put it out. Whereas if they saw it and it's not that good, then you know, it's better to shelve it, and that way people don't realize, you know, it will build up the mystique of it and be like, oh man, this movie was probably really good. But instead of having people see it and be like, man, that was a terrible film.
Yeah, and it's incredibly formulaic, as you mentioned, but also they didn't do themselves any favor. This tied in perfectly with your prior episode on film trailers, mm-hmm. that they gave the whole movie away in the film trailer. So I don't even need to see it. It's a moot point for me because I've seen it now because the trailer gave so much away.
Yeah. And then I was going to segue into next topic on this is very similar to in early 2018, the Paramount Network had made a TV series, limited series, based off of the 1989 film Heathers. And right as that was supposed to come out and air was the Parkland shooting. And so Paramount Network scrapped the release of the Heather show until about 6 or 7 months later, and then they just played them all in 1 week. I believe it's 8 episodes. And they're still available on the Paramount Network app if you are on the Roku. But again, this is a movie, you know, Heathers came out, like I said, 30 years ago. And you are familiar with Heathers. You know what the plot of that movie is, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all about a students killing their friends mm-hmm. or other students. Mm-hmm. So, and it's not like that hadn't happened in real life in the 30 years since the movie came out.
Exactly.
So then when you make these films or television series and then push them, is that, I guess, is there any responsibility on, you know, you said earlier that film is escapism, it's art. Is there responsibility for the artist to be conscious of what they're putting out for the masses?
Yeah. So I actually, Chad, I did some research on this in grad school on violence in cinema and its effect on society. And, you know, I prefer the term the Werther effect. And this was named by sociologist David Phillips. He coined this phrase to describe the copycat phenomenon. And this came from a 1774 novel, The Sorrows of Young Werther, by Johann Wolfgang. And in the novel, a young love-struck character named Werther dresses in boots, a blue coat, and a yellow vest, and he shoots himself at his writer's table. And then in successive years, men across Europe would commit suicide in the same specific fashion. And so it prompted a ban on the book across Europe. And so that's, you know, it's a look at this. And, you know, there is no direct cause. There's no direct relation between violence in the media and these types of events, because it's such an intangible thing. It certainly, the question needs to be asked of you know, how much should they be held accountable for? And this was actually an interesting kind of debate that happened with a case where these two kids had done LSD and binge watched Natural Born Killers and then went out on their own little spree and killed one man and then shot and paralyzed a woman. And the woman sued the studio over lost wages and all sorts of other things because she was now paralyzed. And the argument here is the film a product and can it be held liable? And so Oliver Stone always defended Natural Born Killers, saying that it's a condemnation of the way media covers violence, mm-hmm. The mass media, our news networks. And so, you know, that's sure. You can see that when watching the film. But then, you know, the other side of the coin is it also has two protagonists that are idolized by audiences. And this lawsuit, they cited on the side of Time Warner and the subsidiaries that were involved with the film there, Warner Brothers. And John Grisham got involved, the author, and he really kind of railed against Stone, called the film horrific, and that it glamorized mayhem and bloodlust, random murder. And his proposed solution was to define a movie as a product so it would be subject to product liability laws. So, I mean, that goes right there with, you know, if that happened, what would that do to studios? Would certainly be, no pun intended, trigger shy, gun shy about, you know, cranking out these movies that glorified this type of violence, I think, if they knew that they were going to be subject to just lawsuit after lawsuit at this point.
Yeah, I remember that case because I believe the victims in that case were friends of John Grisham. That's how he got involved. I didn't know about the wanting to label them as products, because I was going to say it's kind of like the same way you see now where people want to sue gun manufacturers or places that sell guns for the gun violence. Mm-hmm. Could you do the same with film?
Right. You know, my wife is a school psychologist, and she also has a unique perspective. We talk about these issues a lot as they affect both our son but then also her students and her school, and I work at a university, and so we're very much dialed in with what this means to the young people around us. And, you know, this is a pie in the sky. See, we're back to the unicorns and fairy tales. But as a psychologist, what she wants to see is the effect of if we had nothing but feel-good narratives in our mass media for 1 year. You just took out all the violence, all the hate, all the fighting, and you just had positive messages coming through and what it would do to our society. And she always goes back to that. And I'm like, honey, sorry, follow the money. That would never happen, because as soon as Universal said, that's it, we're just going to do positive stories, Blumhouse is coming in to say, well, we're going to crank out, you know, double the violent films here then to fill the void. So it would never happen. But certainly from a hypothetical, it is a very intriguing concept of what if an entire society, you know, only had that to look to. That just positive messaging.
Yeah, and I mean, that's part of the cause here on positive cynicism, is to spread the positivity. But I was thinking of Disney, because Disney films are, for the most part, you know, PG, PG-13 rated films. They're all about hope and uplifting stories. But there's a lot of violence in a lot of these PG-13 films. So even if it's not as extreme as, say, The Hunt or The Purge, it's still the violence there. And it made me think of, there's a new movie coming out called Good Boys. Produced by Seth Rogen. That's all right. And there's the latest commercial TV spot for it is Seth Rogen sitting down with the three main child actors. And he's basically telling them that you can't see this film. This film is too outrageous for you, which I always think about, like, where are the parents of these kids who let them make this movie to begin with? Like, where's that? But in the commercial, it says, you know, this movie has sex, violence, or sex, drugs, and violence. And for sex, they show a scene where you see the back of a laptop computer and the three boys are sitting around it. And one of the boys says something like, how many husbands does this woman have? Again, you don't see anything but the back of a computer screen. For when it says drugs, it shows the kids talking to these two girls, and they're like, who's Molly? So you don't actually see drugs being partaken. Then it says, and violence, and you see a 2x4 being broken over somebody's back. You see somebody getting shot in the face with like a Nerf arrow. So it's just weird how we can show all this violence. And, you know, like a PG-13 film is allowed one F word to get a PG-13 rating. If it gets more than that, it's R rated. The movie Clerks, which is nothing but people talking, was rated NC-17 for language when it was originally submitted. But you look at the amount of violence in, you know, like superhero movies, even though some of it is fantastical, there's still that element of violence that is just, you know, hitting people over the head with it, literally and figuratively. So I guess my question that I'm poorly trying to get out here is, why is violence so accepted? And because, you know, you going back to your wife's comment about putting out positive shows, like, I understand that you need drama to drive a story forward. So if you took out the violence, what type of, you know, what would be your motivating factor for a lot of these films?
Yeah, you have to almost look back to the film as a whole in this country to understand kind of how we got to where we are. Because, you know, all through the classical era, Hollywood operated under a production code known as the Hays Code, or just the Code. It was named after former Postmaster Will Hays, who was the president of the Motion Picture Producers and Distributors of America. And, you know, the code forbid all sorts of things, certainly violence, but, you know, homosexuality, drug use, things like that. And then throughout the 60s, filmmakers and studios really started to challenge the code to the point that it was, some would release films without a seal of approval from them. And it was weakened to the point that it was eventually just done away with. And then we have the current rating system by the Motion Picture Association of America that would self-police themselves. So one thing that the MPAA is known for is, yes, violence is much more acceptable when deciding which ratings to slap on a film than sex. And then any type of sexual imagery or situations related to women will get slapped with a much an R rating or higher, you know, versus if it's sexual imagery situations related to any males. So, you know, I'm sorry, but Hollywood's made strides, but it's still extremely misogynistic, and it's still a lot of old white guys that are making the decisions here. In the 70s, you started to see this more gritty realism in films, you know, Scorsese, Taxi Driver, these sort of things, with some really violent scenes, but it was not the norm yet in society. So it was this this fascination, I think, that audiences had with seeing this vision of a, you know, there was a big push of dystopian films in the 70s, and it was still a form of escapism. So it was okay to go see this because you weren't worried about stepping out into the street and getting gunned down, or stepping into your grocery store, or sending your kid to school. That started to change. We just kept pumping violence into films, and then it became over the top violence with your successive Rambos. The first one, First Blood, actually makes a strong political statement about veterans trying to reintegrate into society, but it goes down a violent path as the film evolves, and then all the successive sequels are just ridiculous, over the top. And then you've got your Schwarzenegger, and then you've got, you know, pro wrestling comes along, and bigger, faster, you know, everything. We have this new vision of what manhood is, and it's involved, and all the while this violence is going in the background, and it's happening more and more in society. And we've finally reached a point where it's no longer escapism. It's here. It's society we're living in. Mm-hmm. And so going to, you know, but I think that's a little bit of how we went from having a production code up until 1968 saying you can't have, you know, this is too violent, to just the most gruesome, horrifying, you know, all the Saw films, and just the images that are just gruesome. On a regular occurrence, and making lots of money.
Yeah, you know, I was that weird kid in school who, you know, I grew up on horror films, professional wrestling, heavy metal music, and Stephen King novels. I've never been in a fight. I've never been in trouble with the law. Other than a illegal U-turn ticket, that's the only thing on my record.
I did too, Chad, but I think that we're anomalies here.
I don't know if we're anomalies or I also had, you know, a guidance, a moral compass kind of instilled into me of good and bad and right and wrong. And I don't want to say that, you know, that that's not there today, because there are more people probably do have that than don't. But I was thinking more of, you know, the video games we played were violent. You know, one of the first games that I got for the Atari 2600 was a game called Outlaw, where you're shooting another guy, but it's very pixelated. Your bullet is just a square, so it's obvious to see that it's not real life. You mentioned the over-the-top violence in Rambo, in which case the new Rambo movie comes out. I think it's supposed to come out like a week after The Hunt was supposed to come out, and I'm sure it's going to be as over-the-top as the last mm-hmm. one. Mm-hmm. But that violence in these movies, in a lot of the canon films, you know, mm-hmm. your Chuck Norris films, your Charles Bronson films, all this violence was, like you said, it's over-the-top. It's some of it is to the point of comicalness. And even the pro wrestling at that point was very basic.
Cartoonish. Mm-hmm.
Cartoonish, yeah. And now you have stuff like the Saw movies, like Purge, like, and then games like Grand Theft Auto, and all these things that are more realistic. The violence in movies.
First-person shooters, right?
Yeah,
right.
Is more realistic. Is, you know, is that like where the disconnect with, I guess, the younger generation, or even maybe our generation, who is fixated on these things, like, do they, is it harder to separate fiction from reality these days? Especially, you know, you look at news and how much violence and stuff we see there, and, you know, it always amazes me, living here in Los Angeles, that if there's a police chase, the helicopter will, you know, track it down and be flying over, and you'll get it live. They'll break into TV shows to show you the live police chase, and then when they stop the car, even if the officers get out and have guns drawn, they will stay on it, and the news people will say, you know, if you have small kids, you might want to take them out of the room. Like, no, how about you take the camera off this scene in case mm-hmm. something does happen, and then if they just arrest them, then you can come back and show us the person being arrested. Like, we don't need to see that violence on television, but it draws ratings.
Yeah, the violence does, everything you mentioned, the violence does seem numbing, and because we're not in that generation, and we're, our brains are not where their brains are as far as development wise, we don't know what it does to you know, a young person, all of those images, but certainly I would think it has a numbing effect as far as just becoming not affected by it. You know, Chad, this goes so far beyond just violence, though, I think, because, you know, you mentioned the film God Bless America, a just gem of a little independent yep. film from 2011, written and directed by Bobcat Goldthwait, and starring Joel Murray in a role that I'd never seen him in. So it was an interesting watch. The scariest thing about it was that it was produced in 2011, because I thought, you know, the social statements it was making, I mean, it saw this coming down the pike mm-hmm. 8 years ago.
I mean, nobody talks about anything anymore. They just regurgitate everything they see on TV or hear on the radio or watch on the web. When was the last time you had a real conversation with someone without somebody texting or looking at a screen or a monitor over your head? You know, a conversation about something that wasn't celebrities, gossip, sports, or pop politics. You know, there's something important or something personal.
You know what? Tate and Jeff were talking about that this morning. They were saying how their freedom of speech is in jeopardy. Well, you don't listen to them either?
No, I don't.
What are you, more of a KT in a snake pit type of guy? Because those guys are pussies, Frank. All right, and they stole everything they got from Tate and Jeff.
I really don't like any of them.
How can you say that, bro? So maybe they're not politically correct, but it's funny, Frank.
Well, seeing how as I'm not afraid of foreigners or people with vaginas, I guess I'm just not their target audience.
You don't get it. If you got it, you wouldn't be so offended.
Oh, I get it, and I am offended. Not because I got a problem with bitter, predictable, whiny millionaire disc jockeys complaining about celebrities or how tough their life is, while I live in an apartment with paper-thin walls next to a couple of Neanderthals who, instead of a baby, decided to give birth to some kind of nocturnal civil defense air raid siren that goes off every fucking night like it's Pearl Harbor. I'm not offended that they act like it's my responsibility to protect their rights to pick on the weak like pack animals. Or that we're supposed to support their freedom of speech when they don't give a fuck about yours or mine.
So you're against freedom of speech now? That's in the Bill of Rights, man.
I would defend their freedom of speech if I thought it was in jeopardy. I would defend their freedom of speech to tell uninspired, bigoted, blowjob, gay-bashing, racist, and rape jokes all under the guise of being edgy. But that's not the edge. That's what sells. They couldn't possibly pander any harder or be more commercially mainstream, because this is the "oh no, you didn't say that" generation, where a shocking comment has more weight than the truth. No one has any shame anymore, and we're supposed to celebrate it. I saw a woman throw a used tampon at another woman last night on network television, a network that bills itself as today's woman's channel. Kids beat each other blind and post it on YouTube. I mean, you remember when eating rats and maggots on Survivor was shocking? It all seems so quaint now. I'm sure the girls from Two Girls, One Cup are gonna have their own dating show on VH1 any day now. I mean, why have a civilization anymore if we no longer are interested in being civilized?
But, you know, the scenes of, you know, Joel Murray's character flipping through all the inane TV shows, you know, yeah. Dumb Nuts, which we saw as, you know, with the MTV Jackass.
Yeah.
You know, girls hawking tampons at each other in a reality show fight.
Which did happen in a professional wrestling match recently.
They almost hit you over the head with the iconography of the times, mm-hmm. like the idiot neighbor who blocks him in all the time, but then has a 9/11 never forget bumper sticker while the radio DJ is reading a report about, you know, girls wanting to be Kim Kardashian and guys wanting to be cast members on the Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
But it makes the statement that no matter where you go, everywhere we go, there's you know, you've got violence, you've got, you know, you've got sexism, you've got vulgarity, you've just got, mm-hmm. It's crazy. It's reached a level of insanity that where that scene where he's flipping through these these ridiculous shows, that's our media landscape today, mm-hmm. and those are the shows that the younger generations are tied into. And it truly is. I think we've mentioned this before, but it seems to be escalating quicker than I thought it would. But it's Idiocracy. It's the film Idiocracy turned into a living, breathing, live documentary that's happening real life, real time.
Yeah, I was really I rewatched God Bless America as you did over the past couple nights, and I thought Joel Murray was the Murray from Moving Violations, which is a classic 80s film with Don Cheadle making his first appearance. I was wrong. Joel Murray is actually the Murray from One Crazy Summer, which explains the Bobcat Goldthwait connection.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, it made, because I had seen this movie back, I think around 2012 when it first came on video. And I'd forgotten most of it. But watching it again, I was just like, wow, this is... It's kind of like the movie Network, where... It's mm-hmm. probably just as relevant, if not more, today than when it was made. And then it gets...
The way it predates the politically correct era we live in now, like when he sends flowers to a coworker because she had a bad day, mm-hmm. and they fired him because she said she felt unsafe with him working there. That was like in 2011, would have been a ridiculous situation mm-hmm. in that film. And now it's the world we live in.
Yeah, and I'm going to spoil some of the ending, but the kind of the impetus for their murder spree, and you mentioned too in text that this had a very kind of natural born killer mm-hmm. vibe to it, because it's also kind of a Bonnie and Clyde thing where mm-hmm. two male and female go off to right society's wrongs, I guess. But what sets them off is there's a show called American Superstar, I think it is. It's an American Idol ripoff, and they play off the William Hung video, and they have this character who cannot sing, and he's made the joke, you know, the butt of jokes for the entire movie, and he threatened to kill himself, and then they invited him back to the final show, and when Joel Murray's going off on the judges and being like, and the audience being like, you know, you made this guy, you know, want to kill himself because you're making fun of him, and the kid's like, I didn't want to kill myself because of that. I wanted to kill myself because they weren't going to put me on TV anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's where we are, you know, I think maybe as a society, where that 15 minutes of fame is actually now like 15 seconds. Like, everybody wants their own little piece of something. And I mean, you know, in full honesty, I mean, that's kind of why I do this podcast, is like, hey, I hope somebody's listening and, you know, I'll get some attention. But if I don't, so be it. You know, mm-hmm. I'm going to go keep doing it because I enjoy doing it. I enjoy these conversations. But yeah, it's where we're just in the society of, you know, I met a guy a couple weeks ago who is like, oh, what do you do? And he's like, oh, I'm an influencer on Instagram. Like, that's not a job. That's not a thing.
But it is, old man. All right.
I know.
I've had to get used to this not going away. Is my son is 8 and he keeps talking about the YouTubers, mm-hmm. and he's got, you know, he knows them by, and he doesn't watch YouTube very much. I limit, you know, what he watches. He watches some Minecraft tutorials because he likes to play Minecraft, but you know, we don't do Fortnite. We don't do any of that stuff. And he still like references, and his friends talk about YouTubers. So like that's a legit thing now, mm-hmm. that people are aspiring to do in this generation and even younger. So we got to get used to that. And influencers and yeah, it's a brand new landscape, and it's just mind-boggling sometimes. And then when you see how large parts of the population have been played like fiddles by their own political party, you know, throwing out talking points that are created by corporations and trade groups, we've lost all sense of self, it feels like, and we're all sort of robotic in one way, shape or form, or we're kind of, you know, I don't know. It's tough to wrap your head around. There's so many different, it's coming from all angles too, you know? So it's tough to wrap your head around when you're trying to find a solution, especially.
That is so true. Cause I don't, you know, part going back to God Bless America, and looking at society in real life too, it's just like we have become so. Let me rephrase that. It appears, by social media standards, that we have become a society that is just very into ourselves, very self-centered, very don't really care about anybody else. You know, that's why when you go to the theater and they say, you know, silence your cell phone or whatever, but people bring their phones out during movies because it's like, what? I need to send this text, or I want to do this. What do you care if I'm doing it? You know, I'm not thinking about, is it distracting for someone else? And is that just, you know, is that the influence, you know, I think we discussed this several episodes back. Is that media shaping society, or does society shape the media presentation, so the media is wanting to be as realistic as possible? Instead of doing this escapism type films or TV shows, they play into the reality. And because of reality television being such a popular genre now, like who's actually on Instagram, who's influencing who?
Right. Yeah, that's a cycle that's tricky to nail down and pinpoint. It's a who's driving who sort of thing, yeah. For sure.
Yeah, I just don't. I don't understand it. I don't. And again, I hope that it's not actually that case. I want to say that, you know, if you get out into the world and actually talk to people, that things aren't as bad as they may seem. It's just social media breeds. It's easier to insult people you don't know or that are nameless and faceless. But then again, why is that even, you know, consideration? I was having the conversation with Kevin Huntsberger, the host of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast here on Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network. And, you know, we're saying, like, if I go through Twitter, I see probably 10, 20 tweets in an hour that I don't, you know, I may not agree with or I don't like, but I just keep scrolling. I just keep going onto the next one. I don't have to sit there and respond to each tweet, be like, I don't agree with you or you're stupid. It's like, why do people feel the need to comment on everything, especially with a negative comment? Like, so what? Just go on, go live your life and do something positive, as we say here on the show.
You know, I think too, the question we have to ask ourselves, almost you have to compartmentalize a lot of these issues and technology and all the different things that we're dealing with. And just, you know, we have to say or ask ourselves, is this a trend or is this the new norm? Hmm. And if it's a trend, that's great. We can weather the storm and we can get back to, well, we can either move on to the next trend or get back to you know, being better versions of ourselves and you know, weathering the storm of the trend. If it's the new norm, then that's scary, because you know that's a how did we get here sort of moment where you look back and say, well, it was because of this or this. If it becomes the new norm, so you know, what's a trend and what's the new norm? I think you have to try to have a sense of what those two are. Mm-hmm. If you know, when you get frustrated and you try to wrap your head around it, as we often do on this podcast.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, a trend will be over in 5 years and you'll move on to something else. But until that 5 years is up, you're stuck with it. I mean, we survived the Bieber years.
And we'll, yeah, but look what they led to. That's
that's probably a conversation for another time, and one that would take way more research and really diving down rabbit holes is to see how one generation or one era of time leads to the next, to see how we get from one spot to the next, to see how we got from Chubby Checker and I'm trying to think of other 50s. I got Ricky Nelson and all this to, you know, this bubblegum pop, you know, happy songs to, in the 90s, we get to Nine Inch Nails and Fuck Me Like an Animal, or, you know, we have Slipknot now. And you know, one of the things I liked about God Bless America was the use of Alice Cooper music, because I'm a huge Alice Cooper fan. Again, I've seen him in concert numerous times. I've seen him decapitated, hung from the gallows, put in an electric chair, kill nurses on stage. Never felt the urge to do that in my real life. But, you know, he was doing all this stuff in the 70s. And in the 90s, when he had his kind of comeback with the Trash album, I remember reading a quote where he's like, I can't do the stuff that I was doing in the 70s with the same result, because you turn on the news, and that's scarier than what I was doing 20 years ago.
You know, it seems to me, I remember a case back in the 80s of Judas Priest. That's it. You knew exactly where I was going. I couldn't remember if it was Alice Cooper. Yeah, it was Judas Priest. Tragic story, just where two boys attempted suicide. One succeeded, one did not, but severely damaged his face to almost beyond recognition. And the family sued, saying that it was the influence of Judas Priest and Judas Priest albums. And so, you know, there's certainly, this is not a new thing where we're blaming the media for the way, I'd say children, but in this case it's everyone, are behaving. By any stretch.
And if I remember correctly, both those kids in the Judas Priest case, and this doesn't excuse their behavior or anything, but both of them had spent the day, I think they said, locked in their bedroom, smoking pot and getting drunk, which are two things that also don't lead to wise decisions. But,
well, yeah, I mean, my research on this subject, showed that there was no direct causation, but it did provide some evidence that specifically with adolescent males that have pre-existing psychological trauma in their life, they are very strongly influenced by these violent films. And and there's plenty of cases where they're the ones that act out on them, and some go as far as to cite the film's influence directly. So, well, I mean, the Matrix defense by the Beltway shooter.
Yeah.
So there's the case
after the movie Money Train came out. There's a scene where a person goes down into the New York subway and has hoses in his sleeves and sprays gasoline all over Metro employee and then lights him on fire. Somebody did that in real life after the movie came out. The movie The Program with Craig Schaefer. Yeah. And, you know, college kids go out and lay in the middle of the street. Mm-hmm. Some kids went out, did that, got ran over because that's a stupid idea. Yeah.
Right.
But it's just a thing. And then
weren't repeatable, rewatchable, unless you wanted to keep going and shelling out dough at your local Cineplex. So you didn't have, and you only had, we were, you know, at the tail end of the network era where you only had access to the three networks, ABC, NBC, and CBS on television. So we did not have the bombardment of media that came with cable, that came into our homes with satellite, that with VCRs and then later DVRs. And now we do. And I mean, there were certainly shootings before, but we started to see in the mid-90s them really start to escalate. And that's what? That's 15 years after media became a staple in our home, like to the nth degree, to where we were running and renting all these crazy movies, the Cannon films, the Chuck Norris movies. And then by the time the next generation came along, it's even more readily at their fingertips. And now, for this generation, it's beyond accessible because you can now, you don't even have to wait to get home, where at least the previous generation had to go home to watch it. Oh, what a pain in the ass that is. I have to go all the way to either my house or my buddy's house to watch the next slasher flick. And now it's, I'm bored. I'm going to pull it up on my phone and watch any act imaginable on YouTube or any of the streaming sites or, you know, whatever else. So that's, I think, that's got to be playing a role in it.
And not only that.
At least the influence.
Yeah, and not only film and you know, television, it's with social media, with the live streaming, you can, you know, whatever, if I go out and do something tonight, I can live stream you what I'm doing so you can see it in real time. And there was a case a few weeks ago where this guy was, infatuated with an Instagram model and went and killed her and posted pictures on Instagram.
Well, you had the shooting on live television a few years ago as well, where they were doing a morning live shot, and a disgruntled ex-employee showed up and shot and killed the reporter and the photographer on live television. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think we just have more access, more visibility, and like I said, and yes, and that, and you know, you kind of have this. Copycat mentality or the I'm going to be famous mentality, where because we highlight shooters or murderers and kind of make them household names, which thankfully I do not know the name of either the El Paso shooter or the Dayton shooter. I have tried to stay away, and it seems like most of the media has refrained from giving him wall-to-wall coverage or giving them wall-to-wall coverage. But you know, it's when you see that, you know, when you see what Columbine did and how they became splattered all over media, when you have Rolling Stone putting the Boston bomber on the front cover, you know, looking like a Teen Beat magazine, you're going to get probably people who are, like you said, already susceptible, way poorly mispronounced that word, but they're going to see this and think, this is what I want, so this is how I get it.
Yeah, it's a problem where there's not a single solution, and it's a problem that's so complex that it goes beyond just looking at the media. We need to look at the way mental health is treated, and thought of just in general. Treat it like like we do physical health, and with no stigmas attached, with insurance companies providing the same access to mental health care as they do physical health care, which isn't all that great to begin with. You know, there is the violence in the media and the other. And now we've got this new kind of animal that just jumped in the room, and that's all this new hate rhetoric that's kind of going back and forth. And that then now ties us right back with The Hunt and how what the message is of how that, you know, divides between liberals and deplorables. So that's a whole new thing, as we saw from the manifesto in the El Paso shooting. So, you know, that adds a whole other element to it, where a lot of times the MO, the makeup of the shooter was a loner, you know, maybe a scorned lover perhaps, but you know, this is now not a brand new development, but it certainly seems to be ratcheting up.
I have nothing to say, because like we said, there are no answers. We can't change this overnight. This is going to have to be, I think, probably a generational issue that is like in successive, kind of like, and this is going to be a really weird probably analogy, but I'm going to go with it, kind of the way you have to weed out racism through generation, because you have to get that next generation who isn't as racist and just keep easing the racism out. You have to erase the hate as well, and that's showing, you know, this generation, the generation coming behind us, to see how evil the hate is, and being like, we're not going to tolerate that on our watch, and then keep passing down these values of openness and acceptability to all people. And I would like to say that, you know, it's all going to be unicorns and rainbows, and in 100 years everything's going to be awesome, but I think we're probably going in the other direction, and maybe that's just being cynical, and like a lot of generations are, where you think the generations just keep getting worse and worse.
It does certainly feel like we are, because it's just happening at such an escalated pace, I think. So, yeah. You know, if we would have just done an episode on unicorns and rainbows, we could have said, unicorns aren't real, rainbows are. There are the facts. We got it. So.
Yeah, I think that's where we're going to end it this month, is just, I think you said it best, unicorns aren't real. Although I like to think they are. There's a unicorn somewhere. Because it gives me hope. It's like the same reason why I believe in Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster. Just because it makes life a little bit more exciting. You never know. You're strolling through the woods. There's Bigfoot. Give him some beef jerky. Go on your way. You don't have to shoot him. It's all cool. Well, that was a weird tangent. Anyway.
too many Jack Links commercials.
Yes. And I didn't meet Bigfoot in Calgary. So take that for what it's worth. Travis, any last words before we get out of here?
Try to do something nice for somebody this week. I think that this was a tough subject to broach, and like you said, it's if it's a generational thing, we've got to start setting the tone here for the generation that's still to come.
Yeah.
So let's lead by example. Do something nice.
Exactly. Go out of your way. Exactly. I was going to say, in that vein, because we are at the start of the new school season, if you go on Twitter and, I don't know, search first day or teacher list or something, you can find a lot of teachers are posting their Amazon wish list for their classrooms. And, you know, a lot of teachers pay for supplies out of pocket because our teachers are woefully underpaid. So maybe if you want to do something nice, do something positive, go find one of those lists. Just send a random, you don't have to know the teacher, just do something, and if random act of kindness, send some supplies, make somebody's day. But as always, question everything, do something positive. Travis, I'm pretty sure next month will be a better, more positive episode.
It has to be. You're killing me, man.
If it's not, we're going to be heavily drinking during the show.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Take care.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.